Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Good afternoon from Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. This is Valley Roundup. This week, it's all about housing, a Valley Roundup special in-depth look into one of the Valley's most talked about issues. Joining me are Bill Sterling, whose recent op-ed in the Aspen Times and Aspen Daily News addresses this issue head on. Bill, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Bill served four consecutive terms as mayor of Aspen from 1983 to 1991. Also in the studio is Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News. Curtis, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me on the program.
All right, here we go. So, Bill, the title of your op-ed was Balancing Affordable Housing with the Big Picture. But I do want to start off by pointing out it was under your time as mayor you oversaw that first passage of an affordable housing tax. You're clearly, at least at one point, a proponent of having some sort of government subsidized housing for our workforce.
Well, that doesn't run contrary to the notion of balance. It's just that we had no funding sources. And so we were using the general fund and money from wherever we could get it to initiate housing. And we have to hand it to the to the county commissioners, Kensley and Joe Edwards and Shellman in the 70s for initiating Centennial. Mm-hmm. Centennial was really the first pass at affordable housing in Aspen. And as a result of the county commissioners, now they haven't been very involved with housing since then. And that they're an equal partner in APCHA, which is being looked at as a way of changing the whole structure of
right.
that. But what it did do is it meant that anybody who worked in the county would be eligible to live in Aspen's affordable housing. It wasn't just limited to people who were living at that time in Aspen.
Okay.
Like Snowmass is affordable housing, but they only house their workers.
Right.
You know, so I thought that was a good dynamic always, that it housed people who lived or were in other parts of the county.
Curtis, you cover this issue extensively, and we're kind of at this crux or this point. Can you summarize your thoughts on the big picture of housing before we get into this nitty-gritty?
I think we are at a very critical and perhaps historic point in the housing situation in this community. I mean, it's a 40-year, almost 40-year legacy. It's grown. It's kind of become this ubiquitous thing that everyone sees very clearly and understands the need for. I mean, try running a business in this town without having some sort of affordable housing for your employees. It's impossible to recruit and retain employees. I'm watching over the last 5-6 years, many people, my contemporaries, leave this community because they don't feel like they can make it here because there's not a housing situation that's going to meet their needs for their life. And that's a really sad thing if you think about it. Like, think about the brain drain that is causing and what that means for the long term. I think you have the short-term rental situation kind of pouring gasoline on the fire over the last few years. You've seen rental prices continue to go through the roof. There's little bits and pieces of affordable housing continuing to be built still. I mean, the city, the city gets the lion's share of the credit for building 200 units out at Burlingame. Mm. That's been the biggest addition to the pool over the years. But I think it's at this point where everyone everyone has a view of this issue.
Okay.
And it's something that permeates the community. So that's kind of where we're at, I think.
Bill, you already touched on where I wanted to start this governance model of what APCHA is, the Aspen-Pitkin County Housing Authority. So this is who is overseeing our affordable housing stock. And this year, Curtis, you had some articles about this as well. They're kind of saying, I don't know if this is the best partnership for the city and the county to have kind of this equal oversight of this, along with a board for the housing authority. What is your take on APCHA's governance and if we're doing it correctly right now?
Well, I think it's not exactly equal when the vast majority of the units that are being built publicly are being built by the city. Because they've got a funding source, that 2% made all the difference in the world when that was passed in the winter of 1990.
This is bringing in $6, $8, $10 million a year to build affordable housing.
Wow.
I mean, it's
well, it's to purchase the land and to partner up and or build it ourselves.
Coming in faster than it's being spent?
Well, they allow it to build up, and then they go and spend it on something.
Okay.
You know, that's how Burlingame was financed, and 20, $30 million odd worth of land banking initiatives that took place about 10 years ago when the last time we were at a very acute housing crunch, the city council went out and said, oh boy, we better buy some land.
Great.
So they used these funds that had been building up over the years thanks to Bill's leadership 30 years ago.
Right.
We even had this opportunity. And now we're sitting on these pieces of land, and only now are we starting to see actual land use applications and possible construction starting soon.
You know, it was interesting, Curtis, about what percent we should ask the voters to approve.
Okay.
And we only asked for 1%.
But now it's 2?
No,
it's still 1.
Oh, it's only 1.
It's only 1.
Okay.
But we talked about it going up to 5, and we thought, oh my God, we just can't get that through. But it passed overwhelmingly,
good.
Which was a good sign from the community. So we could have been even a little bit more ambitious about it, but we limited it to 2. But it's really produced a lot of money to make choices. Now, the interesting thing about the affordable housing, there's not just one kind of it.
Hmm.
Burlingame is an interesting example. I would call, as a matter of fact, Edwards and I and Dwight, we fought against that because we saw it as urban sprawl, and we saw it if we had gone into Aspen and bought down and deed-restricted existing condos, we would not have had any of the building costs, and we would have produced as many units as they have out there for far less money, and everybody would have stayed in town. You know, but there was that vacant place, and it wasn't designated as open space or anything. It was just an open piece of land behind Deer Hill, which separates the AABC from, say, the Maroon Creek Club. And as it turns out, I think in retrospect, it's worked out really, really quite well. I mean, it has had its growing pains and all of that, but it has a diverse kind. It's got multifamily housing, it's got townhouses, it's got individual single families. It's really interesting how diverse it is.
That's funny to hear you say that.
There's certainly a lot of people out there. It's been effective in delivering housing to a large number of people. You know, that's really interesting, this whole buy-down concept, because one of the great ironies of the housing crunch as it is today is that there's so much housing stock in this community that sits there empty. Because it's vacation homes and second homes. I mean, walk around my neighborhood. I live in a condo in the West End, and we walk down the street at night. It's totally dark, and yet we're in this situation where we don't have options.
Totally dark in the off seasons. It's pretty bright in the on seasons.
Yes.
But the point is that it's there's very few locals except on infill in the alleys, and there's hardly any multifamily, but over on 7th Street, you know. So he's right about that. So the affordable housing is scattered all over town.
Bill Sterling, former mayor of Aspen, what do you think about the county's play in this, though? Do you think they should be part of that governance?
They need to be part of
it.
And there's a lot of talk now about a regional kind of housing authority. David Myler and a couple of other people have been working on this. It hasn't gotten legs yet, I will say that. Mm-hmm. And Basalt's just finished over at Willett's Housing. They've just done this American multifamily thing that's right off of Highway 82 there. And they're talking about how to qualify. Who's going to get the housing? You know, I mean, should it be government workers and workers for the hospital and or, you know, people that are in key positions providing services for the community? But what about those businesses that need to be sustained?
Sure.
How do you determine who's going to get first shot at that stuff, you know?
And it seems like they're learning a little bit from 40 years deep in Aspen, wondering, well, did we mean for this to be workforce housing? Did we want this to be community housing where you stay in it even when you're not in the workforce? Those kind of questions. You get to start anew with something like the Roaring Fork Apartments that you're referring to and make those rules again. Curtis, what are you seeing? And is there any update to that discussion that maybe there's an APSHA breakup coming, but then they're both like, we should...
you know, the city council had a work session about it. There's a few individual council members who are really big on this idea. I don't think the idea has achieved any sort of consensus yet. I think there's the inevitable question, well, then what goes in its place? Mm-hmm. You know, APSHA is a very complex organization. You know, it's serving two different masters, which is probably not anyone's ideal situation. But you got to ask the follow-up question, well, if you're going to break this apart, then what goes in its place? How does it function? How does it serve the community?
Well, these are good points. Now, the key to it, no matter how it's structured, is enforcement.
Great.
And that's that. Often when the city passes regulations, they don't have any way of enforcing them.
Right.
Like the ADU,
exactly.
The accessory dwelling units. They built about 250 of those, but there was no mechanism to enforce it. So as a result, we got about 25% of those that ended up with Pitkin County employees living in them. And that passed during my term, and I hearken back on that, and I think, well, you know, I was relying on the good intentions of humanity.
Oh, how foolish, Bill.
I mean right. it's like and that's why I talk about enforcement inside of APSHA, is we're relying on the good attitudes of all those who are already in. And then the person's been gone for 2 years and they've been renting it through BRBO,
right.
or whatever it's called. And I mean, so these are the challenges of trying to bring parity about and making it work for everybody. One of the reasons some of those people go down valley is that some of the units are not being used as they should be, you know, and that's what we want to get conformity for.
Curtis, that's one of your recent stories, how much APSHA now is trying to have a full-time compliance officer and trying to get people to make sure at least the units that we have now are being used as they were intended.
And, you know, you see this among APSHA residents, too. I mean, that's who polices this, this stuff currently. It's all complaint-based. And that can actually turn into a fairly ugly situation. But at the same time, you can't really fault someone for making a complaint when this is a precious resource. And if someone really is misusing it, then I don't think you're going to find a lot of disagreement on, yeah, we should get them out of there. The rules need to be enforced. And so now APSHA is trying to bring in another staff person who would focus on this more full time. You know, APSHA, like every business in town, is trying to do a lot with a little. They only have a certain amount of people there, at least in terms of their administrative staff who looks after this kind of thing. So they are looking to bolster that. One of their huge initiatives is to have a database. You know, APSHA, as it is this 4-year-old system, a lot of it is on paper, these records.
It's so antiquated.
You can't really, there's not a centralized database that says, here's every unit. You know, here's how many bedrooms we have. Here's who's, you know, here's how it's being used. And so they're trying to build that, which the belief is that it would let you have a better handle on the whole program and make sure it's being used properly. But
neighborhood enforcement has its own brilliance, actually.
Okay.
In the free market, a number of buildings in town, you cannot short-term rent in those buildings. But what happens is it gets policed not by the city, but by the HOA.
It was by the neighbor who says, hey, I don't like this. This new unit next door turning into a hotel.
Right.
I don't like these people coming and going.
Or why don't I get my piece
and
of
so
the pie?
And so what they do is, and that's how, but it gets self-enforced through these HOAs who decide, and some of them decide, let's go ahead and make it everybody short-term if they want to.
Right.
And if that happens, then there's no complaints. And that's not a bad thing, that kind of self-enforcement. Mm-hmm. But the purpose of making that zone in the city zoning corridors not available for short term, then you've lost that opportunity. But at any rate.
Right. Well, and every time one of these units goes short term, often that means, I shouldn't say that every time. There's a significant portion of our condominium housing stock that always has been, always will be, tourist infrastructure, short-term rentals. There is a certain portion, and this is one of the things I've tried to report on. It's really hard to know what this portion is, but there is a certain portion of units that used to be part of the long-term rental pool. A landlord would lease to someone who lives here and who works here. Mm-hmm. And
Free market affordable housing.
And a certain percentage of that has converted. How much, it's hard to say, but a certain percentage of it has, and that is part of what's driving a lot of people's frustrations right now.
And the nuances to that, because probably that's a local homeowner, right, who is also getting priced out of living in the valley, and
they
so now
have to do it
to make their living,
pay their mortgage, to fund their lifestyle.
Bill, you brought up something when we were talking about Burlingame that I think is another conflict, and I don't know if we'll get to every conflict of housing in the next 15 minutes that we have for the show, but this is a big one. You mentioned that Burlingame was not designated open space or anything like that, but I see one of the big conflicts coming up now is where do we value public land and where do we value our community? Because those two things are coming head to head. We just don't have a lot of space for development.
Well, I think we're just going to have to be more and more creative, but I think certain things I think have to be sacrosanct in order to preserve what I think is the quality of life here. Now, a lot of the public land is owned by us, mm-hmm. by the general public, by the population of America. 85% almost of the whole county is in some form of public land.
Wow.
We'll never be able to build into that. Now, maybe the Forest Service might be able to build housing. They have housing. They're also in the affordable housing. They've got bunk rooms over on their acre over there. Yep.
Which they're probably going to redo here one of these
well,
days.
They're going to need to. They're going to need to, and they'll probably want to expand it.
Okay.
And I would say that's a really good potential spot for expansion of some affordable housing would be a place like that. The little shelf above the Smuggler Racket Club.
Yes, mm-hmm. I would love your take
acres,
on that.
2 acres, and I'm a member of that wonderful little low-key racket club that's been around for so long, and developers have been eyeing it for years. They've had it under contract sometimes for years and never consummated the agreements. And so here we are again at that, but that's in the perfect place, it seems to me, for affordable housing. And what I think should go there is a mixed, multi, nonprofit organization. Schools, Aspen Boarding and Ski Club.
Daycare.
The city, mm-hmm. daycare. And because you could build about 75 units plus, because
wow.
Richie Wager's little spot is right next door and adjacent to it, which can house about 12 or 14.
Okay.
That's the city project, right? The city's now developing on Park Circle.
Yeah, and they've presented some ideas there. They haven't done anything with it yet, but it's right next to that.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's a great parcel, you know, and I hope that we can realize that in the long term for the kind of people that Curtis has been talking about, who have left town. Now, let me just tell you, always there has been a housing crunch here. Always people have been forced out of town. When I arrived in 72, I had a couple of great buddies, but they said, I can't hack it here anymore. This is 1974. Things are just too expensive. I can't get the housing I need.
Okay.
You know? Now, there was hardly any affordable housing at that point. It was just sort of bubbling up. But still, that's always been a trial and tribulation of living in Aspen. Not everyone can live here. It's just the nature of the beast.
Absolutely. So what? Sometimes how I phrase that, and tell me if this is what you've seen from your many more decades than me, that affordability has always been an issue. It's Aspen, Colorado. Affordability has always been an issue. What we're coming to now is availability. I mean, you couldn't, if you tried, find a place.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bill's absolutely right. It's always been an issue here. And to pretend that this is something new that has befallen this generation is just uninformed and naive. I mean, I don't know. I only know what I see. And there are 35 or 40 people in a lottery to win one affordable housing unit, if not more.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that answers the question, is there a need?
Right.
If there were two or three people for that unit and not as many as Curtis said,
mm-hmm.
then I think it would be a question of whether the need was as great as we think it is. I think that partly answers that question, don't
mm-hmm.
you?
Well, there's clearly a need. You know, there's always been a need. How much more acute is it now than it was before? That's one of those things that you need a lot more time than we have to.
Well, let's talk then about another issue, high density.
Yeah.
Because I want to define that a little bit more. I wonder if the people who are talking about this, Auden Schindler, had that piece in Outside Magazine saying basically, let's get everyone into town. And Bill, your op-ed was a little bit of a response to that. I don't know that high density has to mean high height. You know, like, what do we mean
when
we say high density?
Well, I think when he says high density, it means probably more density than the zoning allows.
Okay.
That doesn't mean you go up.
Right.
But it means you may cover more of the land. Right. With units,
and
that's what I think.
Is that your value? You know, is packing the most amount of people in there as possible?
Is that is density in land? So to me, I think the higher density you go, the less public land you have to use, right? Because you can get maybe right now we have 3 one-floor condos, but if that could become 6, you know, like if we could make the units smaller, and I don't know if that's a quality of life thing or.
Well, I think Well, look at the tiny housing project Mid-Valley that the ski company has done. Have you been down to see those?
No, I haven't.
They are so cool.
Nice.
I mean, they're appealing, aesthetically, actually, and architecturally. And I think there's a trend in America for less is beautiful, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of that trend. So I think we have to maybe build smaller units, and people have to maybe think about living in smaller spaces than they have either had a desire for. And you may not be in affordable housing forever. As a matter of fact, that raises another issue,
okay.
Which is the issue of seniors.
Mm-hmm.
And affordable. When we conceived this plan in the mid-70s, there was no tomorrow. We were immortal. None of us were going to die.
Young punks.
The idea of seniors was just like, you know, are you kidding me? It wasn't discussed, you know?
Okay.
So what do we do with those people who have now retired? Locals in affordable housing who have now retired, should they be bought out? Should they be very nicely and politely given a gold watch and ushered out? Or do we make it work that we keep a diverse community of locals? Mm-hmm. I think we've got to keep those people in their housing in some way. Basalt's doing an interesting thing. They're requiring, I think it's 1,000 minimal, and they're thinking of this as a rule, 1,000 hours of public service.
Even past retirement, where you're volunteering.
Yeah,
something.
You're no longer working, but you would do public service, and that would be the trade-off for being able to stay on.
Holy cow.
You know, now that's what they're talking about. They talked about fewer hours than 1,000. 1,000 is a lot. 2,800 hours is what a full-time Pitkin County employee has to have in order to be qualified. So they're talking about one-third of that in public service. Now, those locals who live up here, now think about it, 40%, almost 40% of our workers live in town. 60% live down valley. In most of the resort communities, Vail, Telluride, right. all over the country, it's about 80% who have to commute in.
They would kill to have our problems. Right?
I mean,
right.
you know, and only because we started early enough. Mm-hmm. And those are the volunteers for all the nonprofits, for the music, for the Jazz Aspen, for all the kind of events that go on around it. We couldn't make them run without those people, local people who are living in town. And they're living close to their work. Mm-hmm. Which I think is another important and profound thing.
I mean, the retiree thing is interesting because it just speaks to this moment we're in, that we have this matured housing program where we now have this question of what do we do with retirees. I personally think there's no decent or moral way other than allowing people
sure.
who have stayed in this, who have built their whole lives here, trying to harass them out of their housing is the last thing anyone ought to be doing.
Or anyone suggesting, really.
Yeah, I can tell you where this is going is there's going to be questions that are raised now where for the next generation of housing that's built, if I finally win my lottery in, the next 15 years, then I may have to sign a piece of paper that says I will move out when I retire. Or there's forces that would like to see those policies implemented so we don't have this problem 30 years from now. And that to me is, I mean... Really?
let's end on some of those.
It's very tricky what he's talking about. It really is.
We're going to get to
we
some of those
honor
projects.
Those people
one moment.
They've
I want
to
take
so much
a break,
to the town.
Bill. You are listening to a special edition of Valley Roundup. We are live from Aspen Public Radio. It's really good to be back live on the air. I'm Allison Bechtesh. Today we are devoting the show to talking about affordable housing. Here's who I'm joined by: Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News, and Bill Sterling, whose recent op-ed in our daily papers addressed the issue of housing from his perspective through years of public service in the Valley. And Bill, we'll get right back to you. Some of these current projects then that are coming through are filling up these last spaces. We're still seeing, and maybe Curtis weighing in on this too, I want affordable housing just not near me. I mean, they've been reduced, and the people who are complaining about it are locals.
Sure, we've seen this. I mean, this speaks to a little bit of what Bill was talking about in his op-ed, which I took to mean in this kind of this fervor of we need housing. Let's not let responding to this immediate short-term need be to the detriment of our long-term quality of life interests. And we're seeing that play out in some very real scenarios. We had this housing project. This is one of the parcels that the city land banked 10 years ago. This is, we actually have a development proposal where they wanted to basically put, four more units on top and make this a 40 plus foot tall building from one of its facades. And the project was already opposed by the neighbors who felt it was, too much, five pounds, 10 pounds in a 5 pound bag. And so there was this move to lower the density, and the counselor said to lop off those last four units. And, you know, was that good policy? Did they really gain anything by getting rid of four units that would have housed six and a half people plus three quarters of a dog? Or, I'm sure dogs weren't allowed, actually. Excuse me.
It's always troubling to me when we have this NIMBYism that comes up, you know, because one of the profound things about the housing, think of where it is. Think of where Burlingame is, right next to this Maroon Creek Golf Club and Tennis Club. It's right next door. You know, but they're very good neighbors for each other, you know, and think about where all the other housing is in town. Some of it's at the base of Lift One, you know, mm-hmm. Some of it's on the east side, you know, look at the Airport Business Center with the North 40. I mean, that's a interesting modified form of affordable housing, Curtis, you know, mm-hmm. Much like Smuggler Park is another. It's got the simplest deed restriction of all. You have to live there for 6 months up at Smuggler Park and one day. So there's no developers, There's no second homeowners, There's no flippers. They're all local people living in there.
Price is not regulated just if you price are is not local, regulated. Essentially.
Price isn't regulated out in the North 40
right.
either.
Right.
That's they're interesting anomalies in this whole interesting diversity of the different kinds of housing.
Everything's a little different. That's what makes it so complicated.
And it's true. Curtis is right about that. Right. If Snowmasses is a little easier because it's all multifamily. Well, they have some houses right there above the rodeo, actually.
Right.
They've got an interesting array too as well. But it's a little more homogenous and it's almost all within view. You know, when you stand there at the rodeo grounds, you can see almost all the affordable housing in the valley there. But I think the genius of ours is it is so diverse, but it does make it, as Curtis said, complicated.
Let's talk about that regional housing model. I actually just took the survey that Eagle, Garfield, and Pickens County have online right now. Combined, they want to see this entire region. What are people's priorities? And the questions there that I found really interesting were basically, what's the most important thing to you about your house? And the answers varied from that I can walk to work from it, that I can walk to commercial spaces to it, that it's big enough, that it's cheap enough.
Walk
you know,
to transportation, walk not to, work
yeah,
to
is
work.
It by RAFTA. And you're right. A lot of the affordable housing units in town, you got to check all those boxes if you you're lucky enough to have one of those. I'm wondering, though, if there's a cultural shift kind of with this generational thing we're talking about. Now it's important that I can walk to the market maybe 20 years ago, it was important that you can grow your own food in your backyard. Are we seeing just different priorities, and should we be reflecting that when we plan what we build next?
Well, I think all those have to be taken into consideration. I really do. And I think it's terrific that David Myler and his colleagues are working on this on a region-wide basis, on a valley-wide basis, because it's going to get Glenwood Springs involved with it. Carbondale's getting into it. Basalt's really getting into it. And so the whole valley is buying into the fact that not at all costs, but everybody has to think about the importance of housing. One of the things that we've done that's helped out tremendously, of our 3,000-plus units, half are rentals and half are sales.
Mm-hmm.
And a high percentage are private because we've had a policy of the developer pays her own way. And that has been profound because every square foot of free market generates X number of potential workers in the town. So making all that work in a valley-wide basis, and it's going to be inter-county as well, too, because you have to have Eagle County coming across, Garfield coming down. And so that's why I think it's the right step, it's the right direction to be going
Interesting.
In.
Interesting. Curtis, I'm going to give you 20 more seconds for some last thoughts as well. I do want to commend you on I think you've been doing a lot of enterprise stories on the short-term rentals, which we touched on just briefly, but how hard that is to track, and maybe some new laws that will come through to make sure the city's at least getting taxes for that.
Right. That, you know, that's if it's going to be out there, if it's going to be going on, you should at least know how many are out there and make sure they're registered and paying taxes. I would venture to guess that the vast majority of them already are.
Okay.
Because, you know, This is how they're making their living, and it's good to, you know, to be doing that kind of thing above board. There's definitely a certain percentage, especially in affordable housing. Of course, if you're in affordable housing, you are not allowed to participate in this marketplace, and you know there's plenty of people who will try and make that work regardless.
You have been listening to Valley Roundup live on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. Joining me today for a special housing episode has been Bill Sterling, whose recent op-ed in the Aspen Times and the Aspen Daily News addressed this issue head-on, and Curtis Wackerly. He's the editor of the Aspen Daily News. I want to invite you to our new event, Policy in a Pint. We're going to talk about lots of things, but of course the first thing we're going to talk about is housing. It's open to the public. It's a way for our community members and leaders to talk policy in a casual atmosphere. The first one will be held at Aspen Tap on Wednesday, June 6th at 5:30. More information at aspenpublicradio.org.